Hello, I'm Howard and welcome to the 93-20 Review Podcast, the show that has heard that United are not back after all. 10 more years. We're looking back at a comfortable win over Ipswich for table-topping City. Another hat-trick? Boring. And a returning hero, Ilkay Gundogan. Even the Sun made an appearance for his return briefly. To discuss all this and much more, I'd like to be joined by two more returning heroes. No, not Liam and Noel. It's Ehsan and Bailey. Good morning, Ehsan. How are you doing?
Morning, Howard. I'm doing really good. Doing really good. Can't complain at all.
After two spares for Eaton Park, get me to.
I know. I've seen the. Don't worry. I've seen the WhatsApp.
Yeah, you could take that with a pinch of salt. That message. Never going back to Eaton Park for a gig in my life. I can assure you. Stone Roses, I think it was. So, anyway, you all right?
I am. I did wake up to quite a few messages from people going, is there any chance that you could maybe? I was just like, really? And no.
There's going to be a million on sale anyway. So.
Right. You know what I mean? There's going to be plenty of shows and plenty of tickets. So I don't think, I think if people are really desperate to go, they'll be able to buy a ticket.
Yeah. So good weekend anyway?
Yeah. Good weekend for the football. I mean, you know, all I can say is I very specifically carved out time from my weekend to watch Brighton versus Man United as the first game of the weekend, because I just had the vibes. I had the very kind of vibey vibes that something's going to happen here. And it really didn't disappoint.
Yeah, it's weird. The winner went in just as we were leaving the pub to go to the ground. So timing could not have been better, to be honest. Bailey, morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Yeah, no, I'm doing well. I think we've got our Barclays Premier League back now, haven't we, after those
weeks? We have.
It's back. Where did it go, Bailey? Where did it go?
Oh, I think you just always have one game that's always that kind of big kind of spectacle, and Wolves-Chelsea definitely delivered. I think United delivered as well, and I think there were some interesting moments across other matches.
Mm. Big Oasis fan yourself?
Yeah, fairly. Not like probably to the extreme that I've seen a lot of people are, definitely in the City fan base, but looking forward to seeing how this pans out tomorrow.
I had a very different musical experience last night. I went to Jodrell Bank and saw 3D cinema experience with Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, which is 50 years old, playing.
Oh, wow.
It was superb, really.
Get on that culture.
Yeah. Good. And a lot cheaper than Oasis will be when the tickets come out tomorrow, I can assure you. I've not been to Jodrell Banks since I was a kid, so that's a beautiful place. So. Amazing. Right, should we talk football?
Rock and roll, let's go.
Rock and roll. Hey, Sam, we're looking forward to City's first home game. What did you want to see in the lead-up, or were you not that bothered?
No, I mean, I think Chelsea obviously settled the nerves in a big way. And I think, as I said on the review a week ago, I think that as the season unfolds, that result will look better and better.
Yeah.
Because Chelsea will, I think, get better and better. Having settled the nerves with that Chelsea result, I think for me, because Savinho had come off at half time, I was excited to see whether he would start again. Mm. Doku obviously made such a big impact in the first game that I fully expected him to start again. And then the obvious thing is Gundo came home. So it was just a question of, is Gundo going to get on the pitch at some point? So
yeah.
No, I was thoroughly, thoroughly looking forward to it. Yep. And also I saw Ipswich against Liverpool and I think that they're going to struggle, and I had a feeling that we'd pull their pants down. So now it was one of those games that you can really go into with no nerves, no tension, just a lot of optimism about how many goals you can score and the sort of quality of display that you can put on.
Yeah. No one expected Gundogan to start, did they really? Let's be honest. So. It's not as if we were poised for that team sheet of thinking, willy. I think it was all like, he'll probably get 15, 20 minutes at the end. That's what everyone expected, so, which is fair enough. The team, Bailey, Ehsan, no real surprises except Foden, apparently ill. I've not heard anything else since then. Is that official he was ill, by the way? Does
Pep said it?
No. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Well, that's good in a way. You always write off someone being ill, going, "Oh, that's all right. It'll be all right in 3 days." You don't know what it is. So, you know, it could be bad, but obviously, you don't. You're always wary of some really bad injury. So illness seems better, doesn't it? So hopefully, he'll be fine during the week. Interesting. I know you both want to speak on this, so Bailey, I'll start with you, and obviously Ace, and you get to speak as well. No Jack Grealish inside. The weird thing is, Bailey, I never expected him to be, but for you two, I think it feels like more of an issue that he wasn't in the starting side.
Yeah, I think for me, I'd take more the angle of just, if you're not getting minutes in the team this early on, after a pre-season where you've played a lot of minutes there, there's got to be something going on. And I know with, if we look at Cancelo, Walker and other players, you can kind of link that to transfer speculation and their return from coming off Euros and other sort of tournaments that were going on. But for Grealish to have such a big impact in pre-season, definitely among the fan base and that I've seen online, to then not come in and get any minutes, to not get any minutes from the Chelsea game until the end of this match, but he wasn't starting, that didn't sound like a pretty good sign to me.
Hey, Sand, your thoughts? I'll just give you my thinking that I didn't really think about it that much, to be honest, because obviously he had that little injury. Was it for the Community Shield that he wasn't available for? Is that right?
Yeah.
Anyway, my opinion, just to play devil's advocate, is yes, maybe the Chelsea omission is more telling than this one, because I just thought Pep would try and keep the same side and I wouldn't read too much into it, but perhaps you're seeing it differently. And of course there were rumours of events when he did eventually come on that paint a very different picture indeed.
Well, I think the fact that after the game I got quite a few messages from people that were in the ground going, did you see Guardiola go mad at Grealish? And apparently he was a little lackadaisical in his warm-up, and when he was called over to come on, he was very relaxed about it. And Guardiola, according to the people on the ground, Guardiola more or less said to him, do you want to play or don't you want to play? I don't think that's great. I definitely don't think that's a good sign. I also just think in general, and I wonder whether it is, I was interested to hear what John Stone said last week about how Pep came back effectively saying to the players, he's been thinking about new ideas and new ways to take on the Premier League and tactical changes, all that sort of stuff. And then you see Doku and Savinho, how big an impact they both had against Chelsea. But also, I think in terms of what they bring to the team in general, even against Ipswich, I think there's a big contrast to what Grealish brings to the team. And I wonder whether Grealish is somebody who has slowly gone from first choice in the treble winning season as a winger to third or fourth choice now. And I don't think that's... I mean, look, everybody knows what I think about is overall talent and ability. But for me, what probably will be a bit more worrying is if there is a little bit of lackadaisical attitude. I think, again, when Pep talked about Gundo coming back, he said something that really sort of pricked my ears up, and it sort of shows Guardiola's hunger. He said, you know, he's basically not coming back here for nostalgic reasons.
Yeah.
And he's not coming back here for like a feel-good factor. He's got to perform every single day to the highest level, and he has to show me that he's hungry and that he's committed. And I think that sort of is a reminder of the competition, the environment that's created at City and the high level of competition that there is there. And I think for somebody like Grealish, who's the club's record signing and top three earners, if he isn't showing that requisite hunger, bearing in mind the stories about what happened last season and how his head wasn't right and his attitude wasn't right, that's not going to fly. So I hope that, you know, whatever this thing is, it's a little bit of a storm in a teacup, and Grealish pulls his socks up and begins to deliver.
Yeah, Instagram posts aren't enough, are they? Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, this is sort of the...
And he's got to take it the right way as well. If he has been, you know, bollocked, sort of thing to not sulk. Yeah, if buts and maybes. Yeah, I'm not commenting on what's happened, but because I don't know for sure. I don't really look at the touchline much when I'm watching a match, so I didn't see it on the south stand. But it's up to him to respond anyway. It's a very, very, very long season. And yeah, Bailey, I think, to quote Stefan's, yeah, go on, Asam. Yeah,
I was just going to say very quickly, I think the proof of the put, the proof of the, in the pudding, or proof of the pudding, I don't know what, however you say that,
the proof is in the eating of the pudding, Asam.
Yes. The West Ham the West Ham team sheet, I have the feeling that he won't be anywhere near it. I think he'll be on the bench, and I think that should be something that, as you said, having been there for all of pre-season, to then not get a start in the first three league games, I think that will be its own message. And I think that, yeah, this week will be telling in training, and then the team sheet will be very telling next weekend.
Just to play devil's advocate once more before I go to Bailey, is with an international break after the West Ham game, could you say it's not that telling if he just plays the same side again next week? Because that might be Pep's. Grealish might be brilliant in training, but Pep might just not want to change the team if everyone's available.
Well, Bailey, do you think that West Ham away, under normal circumstances, if you look at the qualities that Jack has, would you look at West Ham away and go, that's a game in which you'd expect him to start?
I'd say that is exactly the game that people would say online, we need Grealish or Bernardo for that kind of, they've got so much threat out wide, we need the control of Grealish, etc. All those kind of things you see online. But for me, I'd still go back to the Chelsea game to not even come on at all. I think it's very, very bizarre in a game that you'd think you would want him on there. So, yeah, I'd agree with you. If it's three games in a row that he's not really got any sort of meaningful involvement in, then it's not a great sign at all.
Well, Bailey, I was going to ask you this, Stefan, not digging Stefan out here, interested in your point, said that the comparison between the dynamism of Doku and Savinho is very stark when Grealish comes on. But should he be criticised for that when he was never... Now, I'm not saying he shouldn't be criticised, Jack Grealish, for performances, but should he be criticised for that precisely when he was never... Or I'll say when he was never that type of player. I guess people are still looking at the Villa version of Grealish and saying, well, he should be that player. He should be as dynamic as the two that started at the weekend.
Yeah, I don't think you can say somebody can't be dynamic off the bench. Like, you should expect that from your players. And as far as I can remember, Jeremy Doku got a lot of criticism from the fan base for his impact off the bench, and for Guardiola for that same kind of impact, that he was coming on as a sub and not really kind of changing the game like they would like him to. And then towards the end of the season, he was. So just because Doku is that bit more kind of like dynamic player out wide with his 1v1 threat, doesn't mean off the bench any player can't make an impact. And you look at when Grealish did come on and it wasn't that kind of attitude. And so I'd say, again, if you're going to come off the bench, you do have to make an impact. You do have to show something. And it is quite visible to fans. It's not because you're really, really fast that you make an impact off the bench. Everyone in the stadium and everyone watching can see the difference between a sub that impacts the game and a sub that doesn't. And you can kind of just smell the attitude, whether a player's up for it or not. So I think it's right to criticise him, as we did with Doku earlier last season. And it's one to watch, really.
Final question, Aisling, on this then. We'll get to what in a way was a processional second half. If you come on as a sub in a processional second half, is that an excuse that, well, everyone, City are game managing this game out? Or actually, is it an opportunity for you to do something different from those that have been on the entire game and don't have to prove anything?
I don't necessarily think that he came on and was terrible or anything like that. I think the game was in up until Haaland's hat-trick goal, I think the game was in a little bit of a funny state, where I think Pep's right that 3-1, had they done something and scored a goal and made it 3-2, it would have completely changed the dynamic of the game. So I completely understood the substitutions, why they were made, and what the purpose of Grealish coming on to the pitch was. It was really to see the game out. So within the context of that, I don't expect him to skin four men and then blam it into the top corner. For me, I think the more worrisome thing is probably just the fact that Guardiola's having to give him a rocket before he comes on the pitch. I think that that sort of, you know, if you've been on the bench for the first game of the season and it is Chelsea and you've not started the following game, I would assume that you are absolutely chomping at the bit.
Yeah.
I would assume that you are basically warming up all of the second half going, come on, put me on the pitch. So if Pep's pretty visibly angry with you and pointing at the pitch and saying, do you want to go on? That's not great.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the football. Before we get to the nitty-gritty, Bailey, Rico Lewis stayed in the side. Excellent. Savinho, as we said, passed fit. Exciting to have two wide men again. I'm sure everyone agrees on that. What was the shape in and out of possession for City? Was it the same for you as against Chelsea? And what did Ipswich do in and out of possession shape-wise? I think this is one of the first time McKenna's gone with a back five, and did that restrict them going forward? How did you see the shape of the teams, especially City, when this game kicked off?
For City, they went with the same setup that we saw in the Chelsea game. And I think for Ipswich, we saw a kind of shift away from that high press that they were pushing on Liverpool. They did sit back a little bit more. And they did... at times it looked like a back five to me, and then at times as well it looked a little bit more like a 4-3-3 as well. So I think the main thing I would say with Ipswich, though, is I felt like because they were passive and they had that kind of switch with more centre-backs in the back line, it looked like it kind of made life even more difficult for them because they really did struggle to build up because it seemed to just match up with our press that you always had Haaland, Doku, Savinho matching up with the three that were kind of acting as centre-backs, and then you had De Bruyne there ready to pounce, as we saw with the second goal. It just didn't really help them at all. And then in terms of pressing, City have so many solutions with Edison, with the centre-backs that are all comfortable on the ball, with Kovacic, Bernardo, they're able to drop in, with what we're seeing with De Bruyne coming out wide, Rico Lewis pushing up high. Because we have so many solutions, I think if you are passive and you are sitting off, you're just going to make life very difficult for yourself against City.
And what about City themselves then? The shape in and out of possession compared to Chelsea?
So they did follow up with the same setup that we did see with the 3-1-6. We did see De Bruyne move around slightly a few different roles. But if you go back and look at the way City set up with their touch maps, you will see that they leave the centre of pitch pretty clear. You see De Bruyne and Bernardo operating both on either flank. Kovacic is much more deeper, or he's operating on either side rather than pushing right into the middle of the pitch and outside of the box. So yeah, we just saw a follow-up of what we saw from Chelsea, and I think to an extent there were improvements, and then to a lesser extent we probably saw a few of the same kind of holes that hopefully they'll improve on over time.
So just to recap, basically, you're seeing Pep change this season to looking at width over going through the centre because it was problematic last season?
Yeah, it's a pretty distinct one. It's like when you watched the first Euro game of Spain and you saw the two wingers and you saw the like big distinct kind of shift in style of play. It's the same with Pep in this sense. De Bruyne definitely with his role pulling out to the flank. And I think if you look at, there's plenty of people that have covered this quite well online as well, but you look at how the midfielders especially are moving out to the side and helping the two wingers. So whenever Savinho or Doku is on either wing, they are either supported by De Bruyne or Bernardo. You're seeing Haaland kind of operate and pull himself across a little bit more. And you're just seeing much more support down the flanks as well, which I think is also helping us when we are losing the ball. And a lot we'll get onto with the Ipswich goal. You're seeing more players around that are able to counter-press and work more as a unit when they do turn over the ball.
Do you like Kevin De Bruyne popping up on the left?
I do. I think it just, the end of last season, and I'm sure we covered this in a few different pods, where you thought that De Bruyne operating inside the opposition block, so to speak, looking to receive it on a half turn like Foden, I think wasn't helpful for him for every single game when you know how well he can pass the ball, if you can find a position for him outside of the opposition space, and we're finding that with him on the flank. You are seeing his passing ability, being able to dictate the games from the side, definitely with the balls in behind for Haaland, but then also this kind of relationship with Doku that we're seeing start to emerge as well.
So, Aysan, not quite the start we expected. I mean, much as I want Ipswich to go down, I do, after the event, after a 4-1 win, I appreciate what a magical moment that will be for Ipswich fans 22 years away from the Premier League. But do you attribute blame for that goal? I see a lot call out Edison, but more pertinent for me is that one of their players, their new signing, has got a 1-on-1 on goal. So, but is it a trade-off for all the good stuff that, you know, Bailey's alluded to before?
So, I'll start at the beginning of that question. It's appalling from Edison. It's absolutely not good enough. And in particular, coming off the back of, I'm quite unimpressed by how, I don't think the shot was great, right? And how that's gone past him, I've got absolutely not one clue. But as a goalkeeper, his first job is to keep the ball out the back of the net. So that's my vibe on whether it was good or bad from Edison. It's really, really poor. I think a little bit, and it'll be interesting to see how this develops over the season. I think a little bit what Bailey says about City vacating the middle of the pitch, right? There are going to be some drawbacks to it from a defensive point of view in terms of transitions. I think that the big thing is going to be there will be moments where the back line is going to have to be absolutely perfect in how it plays the offside trap. And if it doesn't, and you've got a runner and the right ball is played, then you're going to have a man in behind. But when you play with a line as high as City's, that is more or less always going to be the thing that you're most susceptible to.
Yeah.
Which kind of brings me back to the idea that you probably need a fella who can make some saves as well as pass the ball. But I saw somebody said that Doku didn't track his man. I mean, that's going to become a very, very, very lazy thing for certain people to say. That goal
really should never do that.
Right. Do you know what I mean? That's got absolutely nothing to do with Jeremy Doku. I think in terms of how I viewed it as, you know what? It's probably good to concede a goal like that early in a game like this, because it's the sort of video that you can go back as the after the game, show the players and go, this is not going to be acceptable. Everybody is going to have to be able to figure out how to play on the front foot the way that we want to play on the front foot, but absolutely minimize the amount of chances that we give up in situations like this. But again, this has always been, I mean, going all the way back to the beginning of Guardiola's time at City, City obviously are going to be susceptible on the counter-attack. And I think that it's funny how I've heard quite a few already like, that's the chink in City's armour. It's like, lads, City have won, what, 5 of the last 6 titles or however many it is? And all the way through that time, everybody's gone, yeah, but they're really susceptible on the counter-attack. It's not...
Well.
It's not some massive Achilles heel for me. It's just a thing that happening in a game like that, it's probably good early in the season because, as I say, they've got the video to show the players and sharpen their minds as to what they need to do better.
We did concede the most goals, 8, wasn't it, on the transition last season, but this is a new system again that will probably be looking to deal with that. And there's no Rodri here, no Gundogan on at the time and players like that, so we'll have to see how it develops. Bailey, just quickly before we move on to a glut of goals, if Doku finds himself in that position, would you criticise him for not continuing to track a player?
The only thing I'd counter Aysan on is the pass back inside. So I think Doku's probably a stretch to get to the first guy he's moving back to. But by the time the play moves up and Kovacic gets dragged across, Doku is in a position to really stop the pass coming inside. And that's the one I would say is fair game to criticise him for. But on top of that would be Kovacic dragged outside wide and then leaves Hutchinson the kind of door to come inside anyway. And that's something that Rodri wouldn't allow, or at least he shouldn't do. Definitely as a lone six, to be kind of really dragged out of position. And you could go on, really, couldn't you? Because Rico, I think, is probably too slow and kind of a little bit kind of caught out guard there. And then Akanji has no clue the guy's going until he's already passed. So I think, as Ason said in his bit as well, like, there's so much there for the team to go through on the training pitch.
Correct.
There's so many people to say, to point out and say, you've made a mistake here. I think there's a lot of people that haven't. I think definitely Ederson is made some kind of, had some very, very kind of weak moments in the first couple of games. But I think, especially for these kind of goals, they are so few for us. You do have to kind of make sure that you look at the whole picture. And I think there's plenty of people that do need to make improvements. And as Asen's also said, it's not like you've kind of found a weakness in City. This has been the weakness the entire time, because this is what happens when you play this style of football. You make the trade-offs and you're weaker in that area, but you've got to kind of protect it as much as you can. So it should be kind of no illusion to anybody that we're weak in that regard.
Anyway, 3 minutes, I think it was, that they stayed ahead, and soon we're ahead, and then further ahead, and then hit the bar twice. So no harm done. Hey, can anyone remember ever seeing 4 goals in 16 minutes in a City match? Anyone?
Oh, I can. Hang on.
Can you? I wouldn't know how to look this up, to be honest. So
I feel like, didn't we go 4-0 up against Spurs years ago when Jesus Navas scores that goal in like the first minute of the game and it turns into a glut? Or am I dreaming that?
No, well, we did score, and I think it was it 6-0? But I don't know how fast the goals came. So it was 24th, and well, the report, November 2013. Well, I don't know when the goals were. So, well, yeah, we definitely went ahead in the first minute. I was thinking we went about 4-0 up against Watford, didn't we? In quick succession. And awesome. Chelsea the other year when we won, when we got 4 in about 20 minutes or something. Aguero scored an absolute peach, didn't he? So I don't know officially, but maybe one of those 3 games. but I'm not sure if they all came within 16.
No, it wasn't that fast, Howard. I've just had a look. It definitely wasn't that fast.
No. So I think 16 minutes just about beats everything else. I did ask clear penalty in the notes. It was. We don't need to discuss that. Another cracking penalty from Haaland. And Bailey, fair to say, Muric, who we kind of know, had a day to forget. Is this the Pep effect here? In essence, is it not? Everyone wants to play out now.
I'm not sure. I think definitely to an extent, yes, with Pep. But I think if you look at football as a whole, it is shifting towards that kind of way in terms of what wins more of the time. So you're just seeing general trends. And I think most teams, especially coming up from League One, Championship, you're seeing the kind of shift in style of play away from that. And McKenna, to his credit, has kind of led a little bit of a shift towards the lower leagues in terms of how they do set up and what they see as a successful manager and a successful style of play. But I just go back to what I said before. I think because they kind of succeeded a little bit of change, and I think that's maybe where you would say a little bit of Pep effect, a little bit of City effect, is teams coming to the Etihad seem to kind of blink almost sometimes, that if you do get caught in between and you don't commit, I think that's the kind of biggest flaw you can have in your game. I don't think there's like a single style that you say that's the way that you beat Pep every time. But if you're going to always be hesitant like they were, definitely playing out from the back, then that's going to be a proper weakness. And just one thing on Savinho, I do think, and Bob's probably going to be like, a bit like this as well, where I think you've got a player there that's probably more likely to win more penalties compared to Doku, who seems to just blitz past his man completely, that he doesn't really have a chance to, whereas Savinho, definitely with the two of them on the wings, but more so with him, looks like he could be somebody that wins us a few penalties throughout the season.
He makes his defender think he's got a chance.
Definitely. Very Mahrez-esque for me, I have to say.
Even the way he went down was probably,
it felt absolutely like Riyad winning a pen for me. Just to have the quality to almost sort of give him a chance, but then be able to get your foot to it. And I've got to say, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about him later more, but just the impact that Savinho is having. I mean, it's one of them.
Let's do it.
I mean, so for me, it's one of those where for the moment, I got chastised because I tweeted something from the 9320 account last weekend after the Chelsea game. I got chastised for being, I think the quote was being blinded by step overs or something like that, right? So I'm going to go with the idea that right now, this is a little bit of a hot streak that he's come to a new league and, you know, it's just, he's hit the ground running. He's at a fantastic team. He's got bags of confidence. Now the challenge for Savinho is going to be stay fit, go away for the international break, come back and basically continue. If we are sat here at the end of September, going into October, into the Champions League games, saying, poof, the lad is still making that impact. I think by then, even the people who would like to chastise me won't chastise me. I think then we'll be able to talk about he looks world class. Mm. But I just...
And learn English, yeah.
Yeah, obviously, I think that's a big thing because it's something that a few people have mentioned. Pep talked about it and somebody else talked about the fact that he needs to learn English. So it's obviously something that they've noticed. But outside of that, just his... I think what I find the most impressive is where to be, where you need to be, how to press, when to press. Those are, I imagine, the hardest things to learn when you come and join City, because there's an amount of information that goes all the way back to when I first talked to Marty Perrineau in 2016, I think, about Pep. And he said to me, what will happen is the players will basically have their hard drives wiped and reloaded with a new way of learning, of playing football. They'll learn a new way to understand the game and play the game. And I've always kept that in the back of my mind. When people talk about players sometimes need a season or need some time to bed in, generally, that's why I think it is, because I think it's difficult to take in the information and then at high intensity, high level, be able to know where to be, you know, all of the triggers that go on around you for what you need to do and when you need to do it. I'm just blown away by how he looks. Like, the biggest compliment I can pay him is he looks like he's been here a year. His decision making is almost impeccable. So I'm honestly so excited. The idea of Oscar Bob coming back, having Doku there, having Savinho there, having Bob there, it's
the City way with some of our fans, Bailey, that soon as someone like Savinho comes on the scene. So when Doku comes on the scene, he then has to be compared to Grealish, who is chastised, maybe fairly in the long run. Now that Savinho's on the scene, now Doku's getting chastised. How did you think he did then?
Absolutely kind of natural that you do see this sort of thing, but I would just say, look at the differences between the two players. Even the way that City approached the game, they decided to try and build up more towards the left side, use the fact that Doku does have this upper body strength, can operate and hold the ball up quite well, and using it in that regard. And I think for Doku, there was, if Rico Lewis's goal goes in, for example, then I think you really do shift your perspective on Doku's performance. But I think between him and De Bruyne, they had quite a good relationship on that left-hand side that they were working out, that I was quite happy about. I do think he made some more, better final passes, like inside the box, so to speak. And I do think with these wingers, because I've seen people say about how, especially with Savinho, that now opposition work them out, things are going to change. But in reality, to me, I'm thinking that Savinho at the moment doesn't have a good switch of play from Rodri yet, or Gundogan, which will help him a lot. And we saw Mahrez really benefit from that. He doesn't have Rodri, and again, Gundogan, to put balls into the box over the defence anymore at the moment yet. So that will play in. I don't think the relationship between him and Rico Lewis is quite kind of clicked yet. They're definitely getting into great positions, but you haven't seen the kind of link up that we'd expect from those two based on these first two games. I think from watching a lot of Savinho at Girona, his left foot is a lot better than people probably think it is at the moment. And him coming inside, we don't really see that as much yet. We don't see his kind of creative output with his crossing yet just as much, but he can loft balls to the back post very, very well. So I think there's a lot to come from him. And then for Doku, I think it's just going to come with time because he has got De Bruyne on that side. You're seeing the way they do link up with Haaland coming across as well. And I think it's just a case for Doku with the end product. It's more about just getting the timing right with the movement with Haaland. But apart from that, I've been really happy with him. Just the kinks, like I mentioned, with the tracker back for that goal. But besides that, I think he's been really quite helpful and showing a kind of real shift in the style of play. And you've also then seen that with the amount of kind of shots De Bruyne is then getting in the middle of the pitch. Haaland later on, as we'll get to, you're seeing the benefit of these two wingers on either side as they kind of stretch the play more.
Yeah, I think it was an anomaly in this game that neither of the wide players had a shot, but that's something in the future I expect them to have plenty of, basically. So another aspect of the game, and we'll see if Doku's cutting in and trying to curl it into the far post has improved on last season, because if he gets that right a la Robin, even if it's on the opposite side, then that takes him on to another level. Ace, I'm going to give you a chance to go 2 feet into Mjøric now for that third goal. Now, it's a lovely goal, so you can just concentrate on the goal itself if you want. But I did think the keeper was pretty foolish coming out there and made up Haaland's decision. Yeah, made up his mind.
Yeah, but Mjøric. I think even if the decision is a bad decision, it's an incredible goal. To have the wherewithal to head it with enough control to be able to then run onto it and then have enough power and enough accuracy to get the ball in the back of the net before the defenders can get back to the line and clear it. Because I think with most normal strikers, what happens is you get the ball on target, but there's one, if not two lads who have made it back to the line and it gets cleared. So it really is an incredible goal. But I've just got to say, Mjøric had an awful time at Burnley, right? Mjøric went to Forest on loan. They yarded him after 4 games, sent him back because they were like, he's rubbish. So Ipswich have bought him, right? And I'm just a bit like, on what basis have you lot decided that he will be a good Premier League keeper? I fear that in 6 weeks' time, they're going to be thinking, either we bought the wrong keeper or whoever the backup keeper is, he's going to be the first choice keeper, because Mjøric is a really bad goalkeeper.
Burnley last season came up, didn't they, and then had goalkeeping issues. Might be the pressure of a young keeper, and again with goalkeeping issues with City connections as well. It may be the pressure of playing in at this stage. I wouldn't write the keeper off, but it does make it. If he's out of form and if it affects him, it does, it gives a huge dilemma to him. Vinny rectified it, so to speak, the goalkeeping issue at Burnley far too late last season. So for him, and I hope he brings it around and has some good performances in the coming weeks. So he's clearly got the potential, but he's with the big boys now, aren't you, really? And maybe that affected him, we will see. So, not seen enough of him yet to know. But more to the point, Ace, I just staying with you very briefly. There were still rumours, Haaland's feeling some muscle issues again pre-season. I mean, as far as our eye test is clear, he's looking fit and raring to go again, isn't he? It's a debut season, Haaland, that we're watching again, aren't we?
Absolutely. He just needs to stay fit, but he looks so sharp, and he looked
after his pitiful 40 goals last season. Yeah, go on. Yeah,
exactly. No, but I think that in terms of, I think one of the challenges that Guardiola will have is, so Erling is always going to score a lot of goals, and so there's going to be I think what challenge you probably set yourself as a coach is, how do I make him better? How do I convince him that you're amazing, but you can be even better? You can, there's records that people think nobody will ever touch that you could break. Yeah. So having somebody like Pep, who is never going to settle for whatever he's got, he's always going to want more. I think he's the perfect coach for Erling. But I think with, West Ham and then Arsenal on the horizon after the international break. I'm excited. I'm really, really excited. I think one of the... I was very defensive of Haaland last season. I saw a lot of City fans go out of their way to slag him off. And I thought it was pretty bad considering the season he'd had the season before and how obvious it seemed that he's carrying a knock. And I hope that this season he carries on the way he started so that everybody can acknowledge come the turn of the year or come the spring of next year. Yeah, you know what? Last season was about injury as opposed to, you know, the critique that went, that kind of did swirl around him. Just to go very quickly back to the keeper, I thought this was the case. So Burnley's keeper this season is Ipswich Town's keeper from last season who got them promoted, which is quite mad when you think that Ipswich have bought Murich and sold Burnley their keeper. It's like, all right, fair enough, lads.
Yeah. Which, yeah, it's a merry-go-round of young goalkeepers, is it not? So
he's not young. Vaclav Hladky is 33 years old.
Yeah. But Murich was the one at Burnley last season, wasn't he? Who came in, who the fans wanted in because of Trafford's form. But then Mjolic made some mistakes, I remember, towards the end of that season, I think. So anyway, yeah, he did, didn't he? I remember him making mistakes in the business end of the season. So anyway, yeah, this is quite the merry-go-round of goalkeepers between some sides. Come on, Rico Lewis, we're gonna praise you a hell of a lot later, but he's got to score that shot. But let's move on to... Bailey, Kevin's shot, I don't think the replay does it justice, sat behind it in the south stand. One of the most beautiful shots I've ever seen. It was a bit Ronaldo-ish in the way it dipped. Shame it didn't result in a goal, really, because it would have been probably one of my favourites from recent years if it had gone in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think moving into the rest of the season, you saw it in this game, he's going to get more and more chances to shoot from the middle, as we do pull teams out to the wide areas. So I do think that's one to watch. The Rico Lewis shot, as far as I'm aware, is the highest XG per shot in the Premier League this season so far, by the way. So yeah, he should have scored that one. He scored that one.
Not sure why he was trying to break the back of the net, yeah.
Yeah, Doku should have an assist, really, should he? So is what it is. But yeah, back to Kevin. He is going to have plenty of chances to score and take shots from the edge of the box. And I'm sure there'll be other players. Obviously, Foden is kind of front of that list, as well as Haaland, that will have more opportunity just because the space is going to be less congested there.
So, don't you think that we're talking about Haaland looking fit? Don't you think Kev looks a lot fitter than he did at any point last season as well?
Well, yeah, for sure. I said
compared to the first half. Yeah, absolutely. But
yeah, I was going to say in the Euros, you could see straight away when he was playing the group games that he looks like he's already season fit, but it's just taken him a long time to get there. And I think he's just kind of maybe mellowed a little bit during the summer and then just kind of gone straight back to that. And yeah, I think he looks ready. And I think that's only going to benefit us with Foden, knowing that he can take his time to kind of come back into fitness and form.
Mm. So it should have been more than 3-1 at half time. Hey, Sam. It was clearly game management again in that second half. It, as said, very processional. City never felt under threat. There was the odd run into the box near the end, but not a lot. Does it concern you or worry you or frustrate you when City play like this? Did you want them to go for the jugular, or are you absolutely fine with how they approached that second half?
No, I think I'm completely fine with it. I think that there's a little bit of an element of it's a new system. They're feeling their way into the season. Nobody is like perfect match fitness, maybe with the exception of Erling and a little bit Kev. I think everybody else is slowly getting there. I think the goal that we do concede, it's a goal that you would hope by Christmas there's no chance that they're conceding. We still obviously have Rodri to come back. I think that I don't know what minute the Kovacic injury lands on, but that also I think plays into how we play. I don't have a problem with it. In all honesty, I wanted Grealish on earlier, just in terms of going, you know what, this is a game where we can just pass backwards and sideways now, and nobody needs to bust a gut, nobody needs to potentially get injured, there's no need to go and, you know, oh, we need to score 6-7 goals, just all of that stuff is not necessary. Take the 3 points, take everybody's fitness, take it as another 90 minutes in the legs, and move on to next weekend.
Hey, just a bit of housekeeping then. Kovacic went off 5 minutes into the second half. So, hey, sounds like it's supposed to not to be serious, just a knock, could be a contention for next week. But would his absence worry you if he's out for next week? We still don't know what the situation with Rodri is, do we?
No, it's certainly a good thing that Kondo came back. What worries me is that when he came from Chelsea, something loads of Chelsea fans said to me is be careful with Kovacic because he's a fella who will get injured and people will say, it's not that bad, he's only out for a couple of days. You won't see him for 6 weeks. So that was the first thing that went through my head when he went down. So I've got my fingers crossed that it is genuinely not a big thing. I think the fact that he went and sat back down on the bench suggests maybe it's just an impact thing. From a Rodri point of view, Pep did say that it was just a matter of days. So I'm hoping that tomorrow when they train, that if they're not training today, tomorrow when they train, that he's back with the group.
Look out for those photos from the training pitch. Eh? Other bit of housekeeping until we get to the main event. That's not the match and the goals, obviously. Bailey, Ace, and either of you see, there was a penalty appeal in the first half for Ipswich. Did any of you see them, not in the replays? Were we fortunate at all not to have conceded a penalty?
Bailey, you go first.
Yeah, I would say we are fortunate to not give away a penalty there. And Savinho got himself lucky.
Okay.
Yeah, same for me, Howard. I thought it was a pen. So it's interesting. In the main, I thought the ref did pretty well. I liked how he refereed the game. But having said that, that feels like a really big call that I like refs who make calls. I think something that bothers me about who's the fella, the number one? Who's the number one in the league, Howard? What's his name?
The number one what?
Referee. What's his name? The Weasley looking scrow who gets all the big games.
Depends which one you. I don't know if there is a number one, really.
Hang on, you're gonna have to bear with
Anthony
me.
Taylor. Are you talking about or Oliver?
Yes, him. No, Carson. Hang on. I'm talking about that's him, Michael Oliver. Right, is that him?
Yeah. I think him. Oliver's right at the top. Yeah.
Yeah. So he. I think one of the reasons people like him is because
he's long gone, isn't he? Sorry, go on, yeah.
Yeah, he never makes a call, right? Oliver never makes a call. He'll unless he's absolutely sure, he's just not making that call. And I think that there's situations like that one, the Ipswich penalty yesterday from Savinho, that was just a pen and he should have just given it, and not making that call. You know that VAR intervening because they're going to bat the ref basically.
But not as clear. Well, he didn't give our penalty either, which he should be able to see. He was a late replacement, this referee, so I don't know if he went in undercooked mentally or physically. So was it as obvious as our penalty? Because that went to VAR. It wasn't given on the pitch, but theirs wasn't. So I say I've not seen it. So
that's a fair shout, actually. That's a very, very fair shout. Ours did go to VAR, and they did send him to the screen for that. I don't know, like I do think that they were both penalties, so the fact that, especially since he sent ours to the screen, they probably should have sent him to the screen for that one. So that's not his fault, it's VAR's fault.
Ederson can save penalties now anyway, so no issue. Right, the main event, Bailey, Asan, both of you. I'll start with you, Bailey. How did it feel seeing Gundogan come on?
I think pretty good, and I don't really feel like performance is the thing to look at. It was more just the occasion, wasn't it, to see him come on in the stadium with the fans that could appreciate him. See him back on the pitch and know that we have a player that adds so much more quality and depth to our team for the rest of the season, I think was a good moment. And I will say as well, I think the past season, I've kind of like, I understand and I would disagree with the choice of Walker as captain, but I haven't understood people's kind of constant conversation. Like they have to talk about it all the time, but it is refreshing to hear just how well-spoken Gundogan is when he's been back with the interview, with what he says after the game, how appreciative he is of the club in terms of welcoming him back. Like, I will say that's been really refreshing and lovely to hear as well.
How was it for you, Ace? Was it as good as it was before?
I think it was better. I think the fact that he went away, I think the fact that we had a season without him where it felt as though it was all in all a mistake to let him go, the fact that we get him back 12 months later, and the fact that he comes back hungrier, the fact that he comes back having had an experience which informs him just how big a club City are and how good he had it at City, it made the whole occasion very special. I think that he will have, I think the fact that he gets on, it tells you its own story. He's been back 2 days, right? How many footballers join City under Pep and 2 days later find themselves on the pitch for 20, 30 minutes in a competitive game? It's rare, and it's even rarer when you consider that 3-1 is a little bit of an edgy scoreline. As I say again, Ipswich score one more goal and there's half an hour left, and I think everybody gets very, very, very twitchy and conversations arise around City stability. So the fact that Gundo gets back on the pitch so quickly tells its own story. And I've said this for quite a while now. One of the things that De Bruyne, Gundo, even Bernardo have is, for the younger players, they're the guys who set the standards off the pitch, on the pitch. Model professionals, their commitment in training, their commitment on the pitch, the quality that they bring, understanding the fact that hard work is important, commitment is important, but quality is just as important. Being impactful is just as important. When you think about heavy goals in the last 3 or 4 years, I associate heavy goals with Gundo and with Kev, and to a little bit of a lesser extent, but still there, with Phil. And I think that all of that stuff is so important for the younger players in the squad. And so having another guy in that dressing room who speaks well, who sets the standards, it's really, really, really important. The fact that there's been a conversation around coaching, around management, I think is as important. I think that there's I don't think I can overstate just how important a factor somebody like Ilkay Gundogan can be in the final third of the season. When you get to Real Madrid away, you get to Champions League quarters, semis, you get to FA Cup quarter, semi, final, you get to those league games that you've just got to win. You can't overstate the importance of somebody and the experience and the quality of somebody like Ilkay Gundogan. You think about that goal that he scored against Everton in the treble winning season, in a game that felt tight before that, in a game that felt very, very, very big, in a game that everybody was like, ooh, banana skin. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Those are the levels. And Gundo has those levels and had them last season at Barcelona. I've seen people try and talk down what he did at Barcelona last season. Look, he was more or less Barcelona's best player outside of Lamine Yamal last season. Certainly the most impactful, most consistent player. Going to a new club, going to a new league. The fact that he's now come back, he's going to have a big impact this season. I just feel it.
And get him on free kicks as well. And corners, can't do worse than we're already doing. So, right, anyway, thankfully Erling Haaland put the game properly to bed. Well, you just didn't see that goal coming, did you? A rare opportune strike from outside the area for him. Obviously he's a more fox in the box. Good to see another hat trick, 7 in the Premier League. Henry only got 8. Sergio leads the way for foreign players on 12. See Bailey's newsletter for more details. So, yeah, that was the game 100% done. Bailey, then, your thoughts at full-time. Job done, kind of. how you wanted the day to go, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it's exactly what you would have wanted in terms of getting Erling Haaland a hat-trick under his belt again. I think at the end of next season, he should surpass Aguero for the most in Premier League history, which is kind of just mad to think about as a stat, let alone all the other stuff that he'll probably pass along the way.
The only reason he hasn't is that in his debut season, after he got four hat-tricks, Pep would take him off. Every time he got two in a game, he'd just rest him and take him off. So who knows what he could have had, basically. So
yeah, and I think definitely this season, it would be interesting to see how Pep does play that without a current backup striker, whether we see a lot more kind of 70-minute shifts from Haaland, opportunistic in the right games that do take him off. But back to your question, I think good result. I think happy with the minutes that the players did get, happy with the way that we set up, the way we played, continuing the same way, evolution that we saw from a lot of players, Rico Lewis in particular. And I think it'll be interesting to see how the team evolves once the fixtures start to pile up and the changes become necessary, as we haven't seen a number of players that you would have thought coming off internationals might get rotated in.
Pep says he's always alone, hey son. It's an open forum for some Rico Lewis chat. What a performance for me. What a performance everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I'm struggling to see how you take him out of the team. I think that whatever his deficiencies may or may not be in terms of being a pure defensive right back, I think what he brings to the team, the fluidity that he brings to the team, the intelligence that he brings to the team are just so important. I think he's been incredible. I'm interested in the fact that he said in the summer, I see myself as a number eight. I see myself as a centre midfield player. I find it interesting that he's been put in at right back. He's performing at that level. When he said that in the summer, I felt like, oh, it's interesting. Maybe the idea is that, you know, we go and we give him loads of minutes as a centre midfield player, but it seems that a system has been devised that allows him to be a centre midfield player from right back, and it suits him very, very well. I think, as I say, I think it's going to be challenging for Pep to take him out of the team. I think Kyle Walker is so experienced. He's such a senior player, but he strikes me as somebody who's got a good attitude in and around the club. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been made captain. So I don't see a world in which Walker sulks because Rico has taken his shirt. And I do feel for the moment he's taken his shirt. Like, actually, Howard, I'd like to know what you think. Do you think that he's shown enough in the first, if you count the Charity Shield as well, he's shown enough in the first three games to go for the foreseeable future, the right back shirt is his?
Ish, yes. But I think it's a bit too simplistic. I'll segue to Bailey because I'm abdicating responsibility for answering that question. I think it very much depends on the opposition as well. There'll be plenty of games. But this is how I wanted it to be, Asa. I wanted Kyle Walker to stay. But when he signed that two-year contract last summer, because he wasn't playing some of the important games at the end of the treble season, I thought he was now a squad player towards the twilight of his career. So as long as he's not going to kick off, this is perfect. There's plenty of games where Kyle Walker will still come in, and I think having a pacey wide player, absolutely Pep will turn back to Kyle Walker for games like that. But I would say Rico Lewis is close to being the senior right back now, if that makes... Yeah.
Absolutely.
But it does depend on the opposition. Would you agree with that, Bailey? It's like Pep will be thinking about who we're playing as much as who deserves to be in the side.
Yeah, to an extent, I would say so. I would just pull out that Pedro Neto moment as quite an important moment, I think, defensively for Rico, just to show that he stopped something that is probably something that Kyle Walker struggles with, definitely in some games, and just shows how good he can be defensively. But I think part of the kind of discussion of opposition is you're kind of judging Walker off. Oh, I find anyway that I see people, they kind of compare Rico now versus Walker when he was in his prime, when it's not anymore. So he does need minutes. I do think he needs a push. I do think there are things that Walker is deficient at, definitely on the ball. And then hopefully the defensive side of Walker's game, I do think needs a little bit kind of sharpen him up, will happen because Rico is pushing him. And then, yeah, ideally, I think Walker will then share minutes quite regularly with him. But I guess it depends how this Champions League format goes as well, isn't it? Because that's coming up soon. You could have very tough away games against, you know, we could get Real Madrid away at some point.
Could,
you know?
Yeah.
And then you're kind of looking at, oh, well, we've got them, and then we've got, I don't know, Brentford away the next weekend. It's like, well, there's not really a game you go, that's definitely going to be more difficult, because there's definitely going to be players that on the break are going to be a handful for whoever's at right back to deal with. So I think going into the season, provided Walker does sharpen up, I think it will be a good fight between the two of them, and it will benefit both of them in the long run.
I have heard on the grapevine that Walker is still looking to leave this window. And I do think that it was really interesting, Guardiola's answer to the Issa Kabore question. So the fact that Issa Kabore is pure right back, and they've asked him in the press conference on Friday about Kabore, and his answer is, I don't know what's going to happen. I think it's possible that he will stay with us. Now, bearing in mind that he's got Lewis and he's got Walker, and then he's got Akanji who can play it right back, and a push, he's got Stones who can play it right back. And the fact that he's got Stones, Diaz, Akanji, Ake, Guardiola, all centre backs who some of them are going to have to be slotted in the fullback position, it does sort of suggest to me that maybe behind the scenes there is not a huge possibility, but maybe there is a world in which an offer comes in and Soriano goes, the age that Walker's at, we're taking this offer and we're going to let him go. And so maybe that's the contingency, that if an offer does come in for Walker very late in the window, well, they've got Kabore and they can keep him.
If you take it.
I love Issa Kabore. People who have listened to this pod over the last year will know that I rate him. I think he did really well at Luton. I think he's done really well at international level. I think he's somebody who, given an opportunity, could make an impact at Manchester City. I think where he's probably a little bit deficient is the technical side of his game. But then I think Walker, in some respects, when not he came in, was not really considered technical, was considered more of an athlete. So for me, Kabore, Lewis, very much more, massively more inexperienced than Walker Lewis as a combination. But in terms of purely stylistic, from a football point of view, would be a similar balance.
Yeah. Bailey, would you consider Walker a loss if he did leave in the last minutes? Because as I said, this is how I wanted the setup to be with him, with this competition between the two players, is perfect in a way. And I've been down on Walker quite a lot last season, though I think he became stronger in the second half. And I do feel like he's on the wane a bit, but I still see how useful he could be. In an ideal world for me, he sees out his last year, then goes. Would you be that bothered if he left in this window?
I think it's more the unknown that you're kind of unsure about if he did leave. As Jason said, I think if a good offer comes in and Soriano does a red nap and takes him to the airport himself, then he doesn't. It's out of our hands. But I do think, looking at, like, definitely with Rico, I have a lot of confidence, and I do think he can step in definitely this season and become a main right back. I think that's possible, but keeping Walker does help us just know that that kind of area is fenced off. But if he did go, I wouldn't be too unhappy, because I know that Akanji could do a great job there. I know Ake definitely would love to get more minutes at centre back, and things could get shuffled around. Yeah, I would be fine, just because I'd love to see Rico Lewis get the opportunity, to be honest.
I think the other thing that we've got to be cognizant of is Stones misses a hell of a lot of football last season, and you would hope that this season he's fitter for longer and he gets more football. And if he is fit and it's a straight fight between him and Akanji, then I think that Stones will play more games, even though Pep absolutely adores Akanji as well. So I think in terms of how you begin to balance those minutes out, I think because of that, it affords you the opportunity, if the right offer comes in, to let Walker go.
Yeah, we will see. So, yeah, what's left? 5 days of the transfer window? Hey, son, I guess Walker, Cancelo, you're not expecting much else to... They're the two in a way, aren't they?
I think City will do one more.
You think striker?
I think City will do a backup striker. I genuinely believe that. I think that as much as we've all got our mindset focused in on, well, we can do false nine, I actually think that the fact that they've pursued a backup striker already, or are pursuing one, and somebody who is more of a kind of traditional number nine, it means that at some level, Guardiola's had the conversation where he's gone, I've built a system around a traditional number nine. And so having to then reshuffle that if we lose Erling for a period of time, or having to reshuffle that when I rest Erling, it might well be more preferential to just have a player who you can drop in and go, we keep exactly the same system, we play exactly the same way. You've just not got Erling. You've got a different number nine there. So I do think that they'll try and they probably will end up getting a number nine in. And also, just whilst we've been recording the pod, everybody's now reporting that there's a broad agreement between City and Al Hilal for Cancelo at €35 million, £30 million, and they are just waiting for they expect, Jack Gordon saying City expect another loan offer from Barcelona, but they won't accept it, and they're just waiting for Cancelo to accept the move to Saudi,
force his hand.
Yep. Well, I think he'll end up going there. I think in the end, Barcelona are not paying up, and they're not even in a position to register him, let alone have the money to sign him. It's a little bit of a joke. So I think that, you know, Cancelo's going to Saudi, whether he likes it or not. And I mean, I'm not going to shed any tears, because he's going to get 17, 18 million euro a year. Come on. Like, that's silly money.
Yeah. Oh. We will see. Well, Furuhashi was on the bench, wasn't he, at the weekend? I don't know if you make anything of that in the early stages of a season, but hey, we will see. Right. Time is defeated us. City appear to be top of the table. Too early to look at the table. But Bailey, does it feel... Let's be knee-jerk. Why not? Everyone else is. Are the title rivals already becoming clear to you?
I would just say Arsenal look like they'll be exactly the same. It's just a question of whether City will be better than last season or the same, I'd say, and whether the fitness and lack of rotation within Arsenal, because one thing that stood out to me is they've kind of struggled to move on their deadwoods, so they haven't necessarily brought in the depth that they would have liked. That would be the one for them. And I think for Liverpool, that I've seen in the second game, with the players that they still have around, next season could be quite different. But I do think they'll be fairly consistently up there. I think they'll be more of a steady team, but I'm not sure whether they'll have the same peaks that Klopp did. And that might be their undoing in terms of pushing more towards first or second versus staying in like a third, fourth, fifth kind of battle.
Okay. It would be remiss of me, Asan, not to just squeeze in our traditional feature, having a laugh at United before we clock off. So, would you like a little titter? Anything you want to say? 11th. So,
you know what? I'm gonna play better at the weekend, though,
according to my United supporting friend last night.
They did. They don't look as comical, because last season they were, for me, I thought they were atrocious. They were a joke, considering how expensive that team is and what sort of wages they pay out. It wasn't quite that bad, but then again, you look at the goal that they conceded, and I think there's a stat during the rounds that they have lost games after the 90th minute 6 times since Ten Hag came in, and in the previous 30 years they'd only done that 3 times, and that doesn't take into account all the late goals that they conceded to draw games, and there's probably 5 or 6 of those as well. And I think if you look back at how, because obviously Ten Hag, he gets the United job off the back of what he does at Ajax, but you look at the way that his Ajax team collapsed in the Champions League against Spurs, having had such a big league lead, you do wonder whether there is an inherent deficiency or weakness in his defensive setup, which means that he's destined to continue to fail.
Hmm. Well, didn't he once win at Brighton after the full-time whistle anyway? So consider this payback. But always hilarious in the nature that they lost as well with that offside goal. So brilliant. Right. I think that's everything. Got a big week coming of content, so I'll wrap it up. Just one quick thing. Newsletter is out. If you are, obviously, if you listen to this at this stage, you will be a subscriber. But don't let that stop you from subscribing to the newsletter as well, as there will be unique blog content in every single one, updates and all sorts of stuff that I'll write every week. Weekly newsletter straight into your inbox. See our tweets for further details, or just get in touch with us if you don't know how to. Though the Contact Us page on our website, I know for starters, has the link to subscribe. So please, everyone that's listening, subscribe to that newsletter. It'll mean a lot to us, and I'm looking forward to doing it every week and writing some stuff as well, not just the audio stuff. Right. Hey, son, thank you very much.
Howard, thank you very much.
Yeah. Big week ahead. Big interviewer here.
Yes.
Yes. Your lips are sealed, but we all know what it is. Bailey, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah, great to have you on, and we'll speak to you both soon. That's a wrap. We're all off to Old Trafford to chant Ratcliffe out after a trip to the Megastore, obviously, and enjoy Richard Key's 4-minute deep dive on City's 115 charges. Have a great week, everyone. Stay safe, and as always, A-San.
Up the Blues.